welcome to the Dark Depth Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy format. I'm with your host, Billy Mitchell, and I am actually going to be running the show solo today. Mattson is feeling a little under the weather following RC Atlanta. Of course, I've been seeing a lot of people end up getting sick at that event, so if you did go, please make sure you, take a COVID test, make sure you are feeling great before continuing to venture out. Make sure you tell your friends who you hung around with that you're not feeling great, just to keep everyone safe as long as possible. So, with that, I don't want to dwell too long. It's just me and you, I guess. So, it seems like it's weird to kind of draw things out. I do want to bring your attention to a couple things that are happening on Magic Online this week. We do have all access tokens coming on sale if you're listening to this. When this comes out, they should be live right now, like this very second, which is wild. And there also are some events coming up in the next week. The Modern Supers, there's one feeding, I believe I should make sure in a second, but there are two Modern Super IQ, Super Qualifiers. The first one is feeding Pro Tour Thunder Junction, which I don't know what that is. but that's the one that is the RC before that one. And then also the one the next day is feeding the PT Modern Horizons 3, which is trying to qualify for. That one is the next day on the 27th. And we actually do have a Legacy Super Qualifier on the 8th as well. So if you are somewhere on Magic Online playing constantly, or even not, I guess with the all-access token, it just seems like a really good time to try to get some games in, and making sure you're playing to the best of your abilities, right? We don't want to be leaving value on the table. Which actually kind of brings me into the goal of today, is talking about sideboarding, just in general. I know we've talked about this before, but I think it's a thing that is nice to kind of refresh yourself with, kind of shake off the rust, and try to kind of question some of the heuristics you normally have. I actually was playing at the Eternal Weekend a couple weekends ago at this point. I'm kind of bummed Mattson's not here because I did want to talk about Eternal Weekend. We obviously talked about it last week with TK, which if you didn't listen to our interview with the champ of Legacy, I'd have to go back and check out that from last week. But we didn't get a chance to talk about how our decks performed, what we actually played. We both had a really solid weekend, I think, in a lot of ways. Mattson ended up taking down a playset, or not a playset, one of each blue duel. So, a Sea, a Volk, a Tundra, and a Trop. I think I have them all, pretty sure. So one of each blue duel. Ended up picking up a playset of Badlands, for a top 8 finish in the High Roller event, which was, an experience. I had 250 entry, and, top 8 gets a playset of duels, but, you have to top 8. They ended up, paying down, I think, the top 16, which was, oh my gosh, still a terrifying experience. Definitely, probably will do it again, though, for better or for worse. Really, really great time there, but... and then also, I ended up finishing in the money for Eternal Weekend, the main event, playing Legacy, playing Blueback Scam, which is a deck I have really enjoyed playing. I think the only two decks I was really considering, Goliath with Grixis, Delver, and the Blue-Black Scam deck, they're the ones that were performing best for me, and I feel like Blueback Scam gave me the best chance of being successful. My losses, which I didn't get to talk about this last week, so I'll talk about it now. My first match, whatever. I sit down, I get to my table before my opponent, who's John Goss, who's a good friend of mine and a very good, very solid, fundamentally sound player in the Philadelphia area. So I sit down and I pull up my playmat and I reach into my bag and I cannot find my deck. So I end up running back to, or calling a judge. At this point, John's come over and I kind of tell him what's going on. I tell the judge, hey, I think I left my deck in my room. I will be right back. I ended up getting back in 9 minutes, but I ended up getting a game loss for being late to the match. With about a minute late, which is kind of whatever, letter of the law. So ended up getting a game loss, and then ended up getting losing a very tight game to John. I had him on the wire. I think if I had top decked a little better, or just him a little worse, I would have been able to pull it out. But it didn't work. It didn't work my way. And then ended up losing round two to like a. I guess Maverick is probably the best approximation of the deck. It was playing like main deck Hushbringer, which was brutal. Got my creatures were not super effective. Playing Orcish Bowmaster versus a deck with a bunch of O1s and one toughness creatures with Hushbringer is very, very frustrating. And I was not able to draw out of it quickly enough, and I ended up dying. So that was okay, but I was able to keep my composure. I ended up rattling off a bunch of wins. I think I ended the day at day one, so 6-3, 8-3, which is fantastic. I think that's a great finish. I think it was like 79th out of almost 1,000 people. I will take that. That is good consistency. And one of the things I do want to kind of shout out is I actually used a sideboard guide. I used I reached out to Bob Wong, who was did a deck breakdown, I guess, a blue box game, and the guide that he was selling was very good, had a lot of good points, and I didn't use it exactly, right? But I think the thing that is underappreciated is the fact that a lot of times your ideas about what a matchup, what's important in a matchup is skewed, right? Depending on who you normally play with or how you normally think about the matchup, how you have your deck configured, you might think a matchup is so easy or so difficult because you have that extra removal spell or you have that extra counter spell, you're low on creatures, or you just don't have enough, you expect your lands to be destroyed, something like that, where it doesn't happen, obviously, in different builds. And one of the things I really appreciated about getting the sideboard guide, and I think, once again, obviously Bob does fantastic work, my views on a lot of the matchups were close-ish, but different, right? Bob had a different way of approaching it, and being able to kind of read what he was saying, this is important, this is what you need to watch out for. And I was like, I don't really think about it like that. Like, that's a very interesting point. Like, and I don't want to spoil anything that's in his guide, obviously. Check it out for yourself. But it did get me thinking about, like, what am I looking for when I'm going into sideboarding, in sideboard games specifically, that people should be kind of aware of that they might not be aware of, that might skew your opinion one way or the other. And I had a couple games and situations like that during the event, during Eternal Weekend, where people would look at my hand and be like, oh gosh, that's an awful hand. I'm like, oh, snap keep, let's go. And I thought it would be helpful, especially on a day where we are, kind of just relaxing. We have time to breathe here. I thought it'd be a good time to actually go over some specific hands. So if you want to, I guess you could, you can go to the Dark Depths Twitter right now. I already posted these hands, these six kind of selected hands. They're already out. You can comment on them. You can vote, put your opinions, whatever. So if you want to pause this right now and do that, that's fine. If you want to listen right through, you can do that as well. But I'll have all these and a link to the hands in the show notes, so you can check them out, as well as the deck list. I've got hyperlinks to the deck list, which go to my personal Moxfield. Also, shout out to Moxfield, because this would have been awful to do by myself. But I was able to pretty easily move some cards around for quote-unquote sideboard games. But I want to focus on the Mulligans. I think the Mulligans is a good place to talk and have a discussion about what is important. So let's, I guess, dive in to the first one. So if you are looking at it, or if you're not, either way, you're going to hear it. The first hand is playing Grixis Death Shadow. So we're going to have one pre-board game and then one post-board game. So Pre-board game, we've got Grisa's Dust Shadow. The list is from a recent challenge. I believe it's a Sunday's challenge for all three of these lists we're going to see. This is a 7-card hand. We're on the play. We've got 2 copies of Mishra's Bauble. We've got a Drown in the Lock, a Dust Shadow, a Scalding Tarn, Blood Crypt, and a Watery Grave. So I'll give you a second to think about this hand, because I think it has a lot going on. So again, 2 Mishra's Baubles, a Drown in the Lock, a Death Shadow, a Scalding Tarn, a Blood Crypt, and a Watery. So this is one of those hands with Shadow that I think a lot of people love to see, right? You have your premier card, you have a removal spell, and then you also have, you know, 2 cantrips, or 2 ways to look at your hand again, which is fine, right? The one thing I feel like we are just, like, obviously missing here, right? Especially on the play, is that you just nothing to do on turn 1. It's not the worst thing in the world. You don't need a 1-drop. But I feel like you need to have something. You need to have something that you're going towards. And the Shadow deck, I think, is so good at being a proactive deck, especially, you know, obviously on the play, right? Like, it's very easy for you to have a deck, have a hand, rather, that looks at the opponent and says, okay, well, you have to deal with this, and here's this annoying thing, and here's this annoying thing. Like, you know, this is a deck that's playing 4 copies of Dragon Rage Channeler, 4 copies of Thoughtseize, and 3 copies of Ragavan. You're on the play, so, you know, you have the ability to find some interaction for your opponent's creatures, but also you have the ability to just pressure their life total and then kind of switch gears when you need to. Like, that's one of the benefits, and personally why I really enjoy playing Grixis Dust Shadow, is because the deck is so good at moving from the aggressor to the control deck to the, you know, aggressor again, turning the corner when you're the control deck and going and becoming an aggressive deck pretty quickly with, you know, dashing Ragavans and things like that. This hand at least doesn't really do this. Especially this build, which I think this version of Grixis Dust Shadow I think is really sweet. This one is playing 1 copy of Kroxa and 3 copies of Questing Druid, so you actually have the ability to get a little bit more cards into the expressive iteration. Just lots of card advantage here. I am going to be playing this later tonight, trust me. But this hand isn't it, right? Like, I could do something decent with this. I think if I were on the draw, if I knew I was playing against Rhinos or maybe against Living End, where the Drown and Lock is at least a hard counter. But there's also a lot of situations where your opponent doesn't do anything with their graveyard. You can think about something like Amulet. Amulet does a very good job of putting a creature into play on turn 1 or a spell into play in turn one, but very often they're not actually putting cards in the graveyard. So you're going to end up having a Drown and Lock on turn 2, which obviously you can't even cast it on turn 1, a card on turn 2 that actually might not do anything. The Bauble and being able to, you know, look at your top card and fetch, I think is nice, but also I think there's a high probability that you're just going to draw lands. If you obviously see a land on top, you have to chip that away. You are never actually getting the ability to, I guess you could probably sequence it, so like you look at your top card during your opponent's turn, but I feel like you really want the card during your turn. I just feel like there's a lot of awkwardness there with that hand. I would probably just ship this. I think there are better hands you can get, especially on the play. I'm trying to be aggressive, so I am going to put this one back and, you know, hope for a better hand. And I think, in my mind, I think this is a hand that if you're not familiar with the deck, you are just like, oh yeah, I got it. I got everything I need. It's like, no, the deck does a lot of cool things, yes, and it plays a lot of unique cards, yes, but like, you don't have to settle for hands like this. Like, the deck is so good at being on the play, you might as well just give it a hand that lets it be good on the play. Like, that is the reason why you signed up here. Speaking of Amulet, let's go to hand number 2. So, for hand number 2, we have sideboarded. So, we have mulliganed Apparently to a very, very brutal hand. This is mulligan to four. We are going to have... Oh, geez. Okay. A Dress Down, Dragon Rage Channeler, two Thought Seizes, Bloodstained Mire, Steam Vents, and Mountain. So again, Dress Down, Dragon Rage Channeler, two Thought Seizes, a Bloodstained Mire, Steam Vents, and Mountain. So I think the one thing to obviously note here is that we have mulliganed to four. So things have gone very, very poorly for us in the spells department. And also, we're on the draw, right? So I think Amulet has obviously a huge advantage here. We are trying to kind of mitigate the damage that's already been done. I think we're at a huge disadvantage. And, you know, if we win this game, I think it's going to be... more or less a miracle, which would be great. I love miracles. But it's going to be tough. So when we're looking at this hand, it really is a matter of how do I make this salvageable? Like, how does I make this game a game that I can actually win? Obviously, I think being able to go, especially I think on the draw, right? Like, turn one Thought Seize, turn two DRC Thought Seize, I think it's fantastic. But also... you are still, like, super, super behind, and I think the odds of them just being able to slam a Titan is just too high. So maybe you can just try to cheese them with this hand. Like, I think you need to keep. I think that's kind of, we're past that point. I think this hand is going to have to be good enough, even if you don't particularly like it. And I actually do like the idea of saying, I'll keep one land, I'll keep my Fetch, I'll keep my Dragon Rage Channeler, I'll keep my Thought Seizes. At the very least, you already have two cards for Delirium, which is something. But I also feel like you do need a kind of a haymaker. Like, I think something that if a Titan does come down, you're not just, like, dead in the water. Which, Dress Down, I think is fine when you are ahead, or even at parity, right? But I don't think Dress Down is the card you need to get you caught back up from a Titan. I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to be dead anyways. Like, if we're going to be honest with each other, which I think we can be. I think you're going to be dead either way, but I think you need, like, a Terminate. I think you need something that 100% gets Titan off the battlefield and get through the turn. I like Dress Down in the matchup, obviously. It's in the deck. It turns off Titans. It can kill Construct tokens. I think with this hand, if you are keeping Thought Seize and Dress Channel already, I think you're dead to Urza Saga if that's the path they go. So I think you just need to be realistic and say, okay, I am going to lose the games. I can choose to lose the games where they resolve Primeval Titan, or I can choose to lose the games where they land Urza Saga. Obviously, there are 4 copies of each in the deck, yes, but I think the plan for your opponent is more likely to revolve around casting Primeval Titan here. So I am kind of edging towards getting rid of... I'm gonna say getting rid of one Dress Down, getting rid of one Thought Seize, and getting rid of one Mountain. I think that's decent. I think that gets you into a spot where you can potentially deal. I definitely want to get rid of the Mountain. I'm not interested in the Dress Down. I understand wanting it potentially. And the Dragon Rage Channel is another card too where, like, I get it. But also, like, I don't know if that's winning me the game. Like, it actually might be defensible to put back Mountain and DRC. And just go, you know, Thought Seize on one, Thought Seize on two, and have Dress Down. And that kind of covers all the bases too, but then you don't have a clock. And I think you do need some kind of pressure. Having a flying blocker, or flying attacker rather, I think is really key. So I'm going to edge towards... the other thing too, is I don't know if you want the second land now, or especially being on the draw, if you're going to anticipate finding the second land. I mean, you also have Dragon Rage Channeler available, right? So you're scrying. It if not off the first Thought Thief, if you decide to go Dragon Rage Chandler on 1 and then Thought Thief on 2, I think Thought Thief on 2 lets you scry at least once. So, I don't know. I could see, from mulling to 4, I think I could see putting back the mountain, the steam vents, and the death town, keeping Meyer, Channeler, double Thought Thief, but I could see exchanging Thought Thief for one of the steam vents, or for the dress down seems kind of loose to me, but I mean, that also does kind of high roll you, right? Like, you can't cast the dress down now, but if you do draw it, it cantrips you, which is, like, not bad. So maybe, like, dress down, Meyer, DRC, Thought Thief? Not bad, I don't know. And this is, like, one of those hands I think I'm definitely keeping this. I'm not exactly sure where it goes back. And a lot of these kind of hands, especially when you get down to this point, like, you kind of have to just be realistic and be like, this is what I have to do. I'm not happy about this, but, like, you can't always be happy about it. And I think the hand number 3, I think, is in a similar vein. So, hand number 3... is Hardened Scales, and again, if you're interested in looking at the deck list in the show notes, there should be a link to the hands, but there's a hyperlink to the actual deck on my mox field. So, Hardened Scales, once again, I'm trying to play decks that I'm familiar with, too, so obviously I played a lot of Grixis Dust Shadow in my days, and I have played some Hardened Scales relatively recently, so... this hand is an Urza Saga, Arcbound Ravager, a Ink Moth Nexus, an Ancient Stirrings, a Patchwork Automaton, a Haywire Mite, and a Walking Ballista. We're saying we're on the play, and this is a mulligan to 6. So, Saga, Nexus, Ravager, Stirrings, Automaton, or Walking Ballista, my apologies, it's a different, white, entirely different card. So, Mulligan to 6, I mean, like, I'm keeping this, like, I think you kind of have to. It is doing enough for you, where the hand is going to be able to actually put on a clock. Like, turn 1 might is not super impressive. I am not super happy with that or the Ancient Stirrings, especially without green mana. So I think I'm going to put back the Stirrings here. But, and I think with the Automaton, this is the other thing too. I think with the Automaton, I don't mind having the Mite come into play on turn 3. Like, I think going Automaton on 2, going Mite on 3 along with Ravager potentially if I draw a land, I think it's a pretty solid follow-up. Worst case scenario, I can go on 3, which isn't awful either. My other question, I guess, is when you want to actually play the Urza Saga, because I think instinctually I want to try to maximize value there, so I want to play Nexus Saga on 2, and then maybe on turn 3, if I draw another land, I can activate it, but I also, like, with this hand, I kind of want to get access to green mana at some point, even if it's not right now, right? So maybe I just skip having the ability to actually make constructs, and I go and get a Springleaf Drum, right, on turn number 3. That's defensible too, but also if I don't draw another land here, I am just, like, real, real dead. So I think the idea of going Nexus on 1, Saga on 2, playing Automaton, which has, you know, Ward 2, so it's not going to die to some random spot removal, and if it does, they're still eating their whole turn. And then following it up with, you know, whatever you need to at that point, I think is solid. I think I'm happy with this as a 6-card hand. Even though, obviously, Haywire Mite and Ancient Stirrings are not impressive by themselves, I think it's really easy to make this hand, especially with Ravager and Walking Ballista, as kind of a follow-up here. I think it makes it really easy for this hand to be potentially potent. You're making a lot of tokens already. getting a lot of counters, rather, with their automaton. The Ravager, obviously, is going to add some counters. You got Walking Ballista, and I think if you draw, like, a Act of the Soul Cauldron here, just win the game, probably. So, definitely a keep there. The one I think is a little less, I guess, more questionable would be hand number four. So, we are still playing Hardened Scales. We are on the play, because we got dominated by Team of Prowess, which is a deck I'm also going to be playing. I'm playing a lot of decks this week. I'm very excited. Lots of really cool innovations post-bannings here. The Hardened Scales hand we have for this game is an Arcbound Ravager, two Hangerback Walkers, an Urza Saga, a Carplusian Forest, a Bethesu, and so Ravager, two Hangerback Walkers, a Saga, Carplusian Forest, Bethesu. This is one of those hands, in general, right? And I guess I should probably specify this. I feel like this is one of those hands where you look at and you're like, oh, cool, I get to curve out my creatures, and then this will die to that, and this will die to that. And, like, the reality is, I think this matchup is just awful. And, yeah, I could be wrong, right? I've been wrong, like, twice before in my life. You are playing against a deck that is playing Lava Dart and Lightning Bolt that's going to be bringing in Destructive Revelry and, you know, has access to Smash the Smithereens. Like, this is not going to go well. There's a lot of things that could happen to make this salvageable. But, like, your 2-drop is going to die to some 1-mana removal spell, if you're lucky. This is just kind of a thing you have to be okay with. And I think trying to, like, navigate this game so it's not a huge deal, I think is kind of doing yourself a disservice. I think you just have to be okay with it. The one thing I think that is kind of interesting is that you do have this weird tension between these walkers. So, ideally, I think on play turn two, you play Hangerback Walker. It survives somehow, and then on turn three, you play your other Hangerback Walker, and you pay the one to activate the first walker. I think that's, like, the best case scenario. So, in that situation there, then you are playing, you have really no ability to actually activate Urza Saga and make a construct, which I think is actually one of the nicer lines in this deck, right? I think being able to go get Urza Saga and, you know, potentially a sword in this, not a sword, what's that card actually called? My brain always wants to call it a sword, just because it does at least half of the things that these swords do. But I guess regardless, it doesn't actually have that same effect, though, right? Like, when we're talking about trying to actually gain life, let me pull this up real quick. We are assuming that we have the ability to do that with our, where are you? Shadow Spear. There we are. So Shadow Spear hopefully would gain us life, and getting the Saga into play sooner than later would do that. But I also feel like, especially with a deck like Team of Prowess or Burn, I think there's a lot of situations where, like, if your opponent's playing the game right, you're never going to be able to equip practically. Like, that is kind of the goal for them, right? Make sure you are taking damage and not actually gaining life under any circumstance. And between things like, you know, versus Burn specifically, they also have the addition of I forget what the card's called. There's two cards they have that don't let you gain life. One, the enchantment, and then also Skullcrack. So they have some abilities there, but the Prowess deck is just going to kill your creatures in response. I think you do, if you can get them past one toughness, that's fine. And, like, some of them do naturally have some ability to get past that, obviously. Like, a 4-mana walking Hangerback Walker will get you there, or a Ballista. If you already have a Hardened Scales in play, then obviously your creature is coming into play, which is massive. So, I think there is merit, especially if this is your seven, to mulliganing down to six cards looking for some kind of effect to pump your creatures. I actually think this is still a keep, though. I think you have the ability, if your opponent ends up using a Lava Dart on a 1-1 Hangar Back Walker, that is very annoying, yes, but I think that's okay. The follow-up, but the lead I would be worried about is if they go like Soul Scar Mage on one, and then on turn two, they Lava Dart the Walker. That's bad for us. I think that's just awful. But I think otherwise you can really kind of go through this game and still actually have some pressure. I think the Hangar Back Walkers dying isn't the worst thing, because you're still getting some tokens after the fact. And if you're lining up your cards correctly, I think even going Hangar Back Walker on two, and then on turn three going to just activate Urza Saga. So I think playing Saga on turn two, allowing you to actually make a construct and kind of go wide if they... if you need to. And I think that's actually better. I think being able to go a little bit taller with that, I think actually helps. That also opens up the door for you to have a construct, go find a Springleaf Drum, and then have access to a source and play like a Ravager the next turn. I think that actually puts you in a position where like you're not going to get beat by just a Lava Dart and a Destructive Revelry. I think that's what you're trying to avoid, because like they're going to have at least two removal spells. So it's like, what are the games that I look for that I'm going to win are the ones where I'm able to survive three. And if they have Brotherhood's End, they just have Brotherhood's End. The game's just over. It's fine. But again, that's just something you have to be okay with. Let's get to game number five. Hand number five here. I just picked a classic just because I just love the deck. I love Murktide. So if you look at hand number five, it is my good friend Murktide. Murktide at home. If you're looking at this hand, it is a classic, and I feel like I get this hand all the time and get punished for it. But that's okay. This is a spell, counterspell, Lightning Bolt, Ledger Shredder, Dragon Rage Channeler, Unholy Heat, Mishra's Bauble, and Scalding Tongue. So again, you got some creatures in Ledger Shredder and DRC. You've got some instants in Counterspell, Lightning Bolt, and Unholy Heat. You've got a Mishra's Bauble, and then you also have Lingtarn. And this is like one of those hands where like if you are playing Murktide, I feel like this is a hand that you're just like, yep, I have to keep it. And I think you're right for the most part. Like the Dekka, I think it does a very good job as well. I don't think it does a little different compared to Grixis Death Shadow. I think Grixis Death Shadow does a better job of kind of having a hard stance. Murktide is very much a fluid. Like, I feel like it's a tightrope where you are, I feel like, very close to dying and very close to winning at all points, which makes the games, I think, much more interesting. A lot of situations where, like, you're just, like, miles ahead or, like, miles behind, which, you know, is a thing. But it's hard to get out of the hole. I think with Murktide, it's a little easier to kind of bounce back with a good draw, the second iteration drawing you into this, whatever. This hand is fine, and I think it has to be fine. And this is kind of like the thing I like to mention is like best case versus common case, where like, yes, my opponent could very easily have double removal spell. I can never draw another land, but like, you're playing this deck because you are hoping that your spells are going to resolve and you're going to find the lands. You've got enough selection in a hand like this where, like, if I go turn one, Dragon Rage Channeler, Mishra's Bauble, and Surveil, I should be finding my other land before I untap. Like, I should be drawing well, looking at my top card, if it's not a land, I can mill it. I can do the same thing with the bubble and just draw a card. And if I don't have a land for my draw step, for my surveil, for my Mishra's Bauble trigger, or for my second land drop, turn draw, like, that's four looks. That's not on me anymore. That's just what happens. I've been at this point a couple times where, like, I have these kind of hands and I miss on lands. I'm like, this is a ridiculous, man, I should play more lands. Like, no, that just happens. Like, you gotta be okay with this. Like, this is, unfortunately, I think for some people, this is a snap keep. The fact you have one land is totally fine, and it's just, this just has to happen. The one thing that is kind of awkward, though, I think, having DRC in the arrangement, I think, makes it a little bit better. But you do end up with a chance you really want to use a removal spell on turn one, which I think then makes the Scalding Tunnel a little bit more awkward. You can obviously sequence it still, where, like, you know, depending on what your opponent's playing, if they're turn one Hierarch, you can still, like, look at your top card, and then if it's good, if it's bad, you can just, like, you know, fetch during their upkeep after you draw your card if you want to get rid of. So, I kind of understand wanting to get rid of this one, but I think you kind of have to. And obviously, everything else past this point is going to end up being great. And I think most people will agree with me on this one. The one I am a little less sure about, and I think this one is kind of, not an extreme example, but kind of a stressed example, at least, is hand number six. Still on Murktide. We are on the draw versus Dredge, which I'm very excited about, by the way. Thodek ended up making top eight with a Dredge list, which, again, I will be playing sometime soon, sometime this week at least. One of my favorite decks, I think, historically, and, you know, seeing it kind of fall off, I think, was, Graveyard Hate seems to be kind of at a right now, so I think this is actually a really interesting deck to be on, as far as people are concerned. It's just like, you know, graveyards are not an issue, what am I doing here? Even the list that I'm looking at here, let me go back to my Murktide list, doesn't really have good sideboard options for the deck. It's not a deck that is on the radar. So as far as actual hard, powerful threats are concerned, I have Unlicensed Hearth. And that's it, really. I mean, like, there's a Blood Moon, and there's a Force of Negation, there's a Subtlety, which I actually like Subtlety in this matchup. But, like, you don't have a lot of really strong things to do here. So, there's a chance you just get ran over. And that's okay. Honestly, it's just like, this is what you signed up for. You did not bring Appropriate Hate, and you might get punished for it. And your cards are all kind of awful here. So, I think, and this is one of the situations where, like, the best case scenario is that, like, I could just, like, have, you know, a counterspell on turn one, and I could have Unlicensed Hearth on turn two. I could have another counterspell on turn three. I could start eating their graveyard, and, you know, by the time they get anywhere near us in this game, they are just, like, slowly dying to our Hearth and, you know, a rat or something like that. But, like, the odds of that actually happening, especially with only one in your 75, is just slim. So we're definitely playing a kind of control game here and have to make sure that our plan kind of works with that. We have Felidity, we have the Force of Negation. That should help slow down their big, more explosive spells, whether that's the Cathartic Reunion or something like that. We also have Brotherhood's End to help clean some things up. I think Flusterstorm ends up being a really powerful card here, just because it does allow you to counter those spells on one. So, we do have interaction here, but once they get the graveyard going, the game is more or less over. We have one ability to clean up. The advantages we do have are, we are very good in the air, right? I think having a 1-3 blocker in Ledger Shredder is very nice. I think having Subtlety to blend is nice as well. And then we also have Murktide Region, which is a massive can go over. So we're not dead in the water. We've got things. We have a chance here. So this hand, the mulligan to six now, is... here we go. We've got a Preordain, Expressive Iteration, Counterspell, Spell Snare, Murktide Regent, Island, and Scalding Tarn. So again, Preordain, Expressive Iteration, Counterspell, and Spell Snare, and Murktide, and an Island. And this is just one of those hands where, like, this is great. I mean, like, this is not what I want, but this is going to have to do. You have the counterspell for that first two drop if they have it. You've got counterspell for a follow-up if they have that as well. It's not fantastic. Like, this is one of those hands, if they... I don't tell people this, but if your opponent just goes like, I'll just pass on turn one, and they just like naturally draw a card on turn two, and then they discard, Stinkweed Imp, like we actually probably just die. Like them just dredging through their deck is probably just good enough. Most people won't do that. I will admit, but that would be good enough with this kind of hand. But we want them to actually cast Cathartic Reunion. We want them to... maybe not Cathartic Reunion. We don't want them to discard. But, you know, if they have the card called the Thrilling Discovery, that's fine. I mean, like, that would be ideal. And I think we have to just kind of be realistic that, like, we're just not prepared for this matchup. If we are able to counter any of those explosive two drops from the deck, then we have a chance. Sodex version in particular is actually playing Tome Scourer as well. So they went down onto copies of Thrilling Discovery. So something like Spell Snare is not going to be as good as normally, you know, quote unquote normally, as it could be. But the counterspell is decent. The counterspell is fine. And being able to actually transition from this counterspell setup into another action spell with Preordain and eventually Expressive Iteration allows this hand to be a little bit more flexible. So even if we don't find, you know, the Unlicensed Hearth by turn two, this still allows us to kind of go search and try to find something like maybe it's a Lightning Bolt to help kind of stave off its go find the Brotherhood's End to help clean up the board. There are some other things we could do. Or maybe it's honestly just putting cards in the graveyard for Murktide Regent so it can be a even faster clock. Like, I think that is still fine with a hand like this. So I'm actually pretty happy to have. I think on the play, this hand is actually kind of awkward, though, oddly enough. I know most hands get better on the play, but I think on the draw, this hand actually is better, just because I do want the Spell Snare to be locked. I really can't play the Ponder on turn one, but I can play it on turn three, and I want the extra card, I want the additional card to draw land without having to cast the Preordain if it come up naturally. So it's kind of a weird tension there. But I think with the six, I think it is kind of defensible to mulligan to Gay Force of Negation. I think that would be a really solid card. Or honestly, maybe even going down a little bit. This hand is in a lot of ways replaceable. Like, there's nothing here that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I got this in my opener. Oh, they're so dead. I think Spell Snare is the closest thing to that. And yeah, that is definitely not a lights out versus the deck that's playing four Tome Scourers and playing copies of Dark Blast in the list. You got to do a little bit. Otherworldly Gaze too. Like the one drops there, they which I really do like. I think Dark Blaston's meta is, like, insane. But regardless, I think it makes sense why you would keep it. I think it makes sense why you would mulligan it. And I'm actually really interested to see what people think about this hand. So, you know, let me know. Post in the comments, post on Twitter. Interested to see what people think. See some lively discussions about mulliganing. And hopefully I gave you a little bit to kind of chew on here. I think, especially this year, my mulligan decisions have gotten generally better. I think I've improved in that area. And I don't think I was weak in it before, but I think I've gotten a lot more effective at quickly looking at a hand and kind of developing a game plan and going from there. And I think having that kind of plan in mind, especially when looking at hands like this, helps kind of focus why we put cards back and what we're looking for, especially when we're choosing the cards to put into the sideboard. And a lot of people that I've, you know, not a lot of people that I've birded, but bird a lot of friends. My friends are pretty good players, I'd like to think. But a lot of games that I've seen have these kind of decisions that really come down to, you know, how important do you think this card is? And I think a lot of cards are really great. But, you know, you need to have a plan that works for you in this situation. It's not like you can always just keep a hand because it's just always good. You know, some hands just, you know, I can't keep Delver, Lightning Bolt, Storm. Like, I'm just going to die. And I think that's obviously an extreme example from Legacy, but, you know, the same thing happens in Modern. Like, I can't just keep a hand that doesn't interact with, you know, a turn through Titan. I can't just keep a hand that doesn't have any removal spells for Swift Spear or Goblin Guide. Like, I'm in really big trouble if my opponent keeps 7 and, you know, just goes Goblin Guide. You have to be prepared for these kind of things, and, you know, I think a lot of people could benefit from trying to be a little more thoughtful there. So, again, shout out to Moxfield for making this a little bit easier for by myself. Moxfield, free idea. I think it'd be really sweet if you had the ability to actually make a sideboard change. So, like, if I wanted to talk about how Murktide would play against Amulet, I'd be able to select, like, you know, sideboarding for X matchup and then say, let me put this in, let me put that out. You know, maybe populate a recent list so I could compare it as I'm sideboarding, and then maybe you keep track of it so I can make my own sideboard guide. Maybe you can also do it so you can see how many times I'm using a card. That's interesting. Maybe have a little place for notes. I don't know. Moxfield, call me. Let me know what you think. Maybe we do something together. I don't know. Anyways, we should get going. Well, I should get going. I've been talking for a long time here. If you want to find the show, you can find my co-host Michael Mapson, who is hopefully feeling better at this point. He is at Expedition Map on Twitter. If you're interested in finding the show, we are at Depth_podcast on Twitter as well. If you want to find me, I am at Bad Luck Bandit on Twitter. And of course, we've got all the links to all the cool stuff. You can check that out. I don't want to keep you though. Enjoy your holiday season, and we will be off next week, so you won't see us then, but we'll be thinking of you, and we should have a very special episode coming up relatively soon, and I hope you enjoy that when it comes out. Alright, well, with that, I will see you next week. Oh, I guess not. Ugh. I guess I'll see you next year. Happy New Year. Alright, bye.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the scene sees Reclaimer. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the planes, then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red luck every night's crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow, underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil, an avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The night lunges forward, going for the kill, but death shadows too tricky, it just won't sit still. It's up in denials, compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The night takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't seek forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad Arbor saw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world. Dark.